It's just a you can't compare it. I mean, other forms of radio broadcasting, you're really busy doing all sorts of things, whether you're in those days queuing up a record on a turntable, putting in promotional pieces or something like that. It was more really, and it could be quite boring in Parliament, still can be, just sitting there and calling them every 10 minutes. Or no, I think it was 7 or 8 minutes. If you had a 20-minute speech, about 7 or 8 minutes passed, you'd come in and remind people who was talking. And so the instruction was to try and pick a point, for example, particularly if they were having a glass of water or something, or having a cough, you could talk over them. Some of them was easy to do, others they'd talk under wet cement and you just have to go in over the top of them.
What aspects of parliamentary proceedings were actually broadcast back in those days?
All of it.
Both chambers at the same time?
No. It was like today. There were days relegated to House broadcasts and two for the Senate. And I'm just thinking in those days, I think you're asking me to really remember a long while ago now. They used to sit only 3 days a week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. But then they had 3 weeks worth of sitting and they were 1 week up, I think. That was the pattern. And two out of those 3 days, I think, was the House and one was the Senate. These days, it's 4 days a week and two are from the reps and two are from the Senate. We still alternate.
And you still, both chambers are not covered at the same time.
No. When we're broadcasting the House of Representatives, this is still the case, the non-broadcast chamber is recorded, or the question time is, and at the end of the broadcast for, say, the House of Representatives, we conclude the coverage with a recording of the non-broadcast House's question time. We still do that. Yeah.
How many people work together in a way, sort of like a group of people on duty to cover all eventualities? Your voice might break or something. There's
I
someone there
can't
to
know
back
there
up.
was no emergency backup. I mean, if that sort of thing happened, I can't remember it happening. I guess you could ring Northbourne Avenue and say, can you send someone else over? But there were three of us. There was Kevin Chapman, Errol Silver, and myself were the ones that did the lion's share of the parliamentary broadcasting. There were a couple of others, Rod Henshaw, I think Peter Leonard did. Not very often, but he was there. I'm just trying to think of the others, but we were the three main ones. Yeah.
In terms of, I suppose, the protocols and rules for parliamentary broadcasting, can you tell them and talk a bit about the what were the sort of the guidelines that, or the
Well,
rules that you had to
number one,
work
to be
within?
apolitical, absolutely apolitical. Back in those days, to interrupt as least as possible. The protocols, mainly apolitical, is the main thing. And you just had to give the audience a clear indication of what was going on. And that's still the basic rule for parliamentary broadcasting.
So your comments would have to be restricted to facts and what was actually you were
Has to be
seeing.
restricted to the bill before the House or whatever the question is before the House that's being voted on. And nothing much else. We have broadened that in recent years. I mean, sometimes it's very hard, you know, when you've got five or six divisions in a row, you start to sound like a crack record. So you're looking at other things to talk about. So you can now talk about things that happen in the building sometimes. Like a few weeks ago, I mentioned the fact that the building was 24 years old, was its anniversary, and did a bit of history leading up to the building, so I can throw a few of those sorts of things in now, which is a departure from the old days when you just spoke about the legislation, and nothing else.
And the name of the person
This person
speaking.
speaking, yes.
Yeah.
So it has broadened a bit since then. The other thing too that we've done, this has come in the last 20 years really, is we were given permission to read some news headlines during divisions, and that works well because when Parliament's not in session these days, it goes out on ABC News Radio. So it's in Parliament's interest and News Radio's interest for us to continue that news involvement. And so that's another way we can deal with divisions. But I always have the philosophy these days of, first of all, if a division is on, somebody tunes in, they want to know what it's all about. So straight away, when it's called, I tell people what it's all about. You can then also talk about what might be happening in the other chamber, because we've got monitors for the non-broadcast chamber. Mm. What's on the program there? What might even be coming up next week? It's usually later on, after the second or third division, I might start talking in terms of news headlines and things like that.
Yeah. And this obviously does not take place when someone is speaking.
Oh, no, no. It's only during when there's... Well, usually you can guarantee there's 4 minutes to fill when a division is called, because they ring the bells for 4 minutes. And then there's the appointment of the tellers for the count. And the count usually takes, in the House of Representatives, probably at least another 4 or 5 minutes. So you've got two lots there to fill. Two slabs, shall we say.
Yeah. Tell me, to whom were you actually responsible for what you were doing? There must have been some hierarchy that would, in a sense, keep an eye on that you were...
So the Parliamentary Broadcasting Committee, and any changes comprising members and senators, any changes that the ABC wants to make, if they want to make any changes, can't be made really unless they're run past that committee. So ultimately they're the people we're responsible to for the broadcasts.
So what's there, and so there, the, any monitoring of what you were saying or doing, was there any?
Well, I've had very little interference over the years or comments from an official area, which is probably a good thing. It must mean they're fairly happy with what we've been doing.
So the ABC is not itself monitoring what you were doing?
Well, I'm sure they are in certain areas, because, I mean, when the broadcasters, when Parliament's sitting in Sydney, news radio, I'm sure we're up there on the monitors all the time, so people would be listening to us there. And I have people in Sydney that I answer to as well. But with the parliamentary broadcasting, it's mainly the broadcasting committee.
Of Parliament.
Yeah. Of Parliament, yes. I'll just elaborate there. For example, I don't do this anymore, but I was running the show for about 10 years until a couple of years ago. I was administering the parliamentary broadcasting. And if for any reason we need to change broadcast houses, I'll just give you an example of this. Back in 2004, I think it was, when John Howard announced we were going to war in Iraq, it was, from memory, a Tuesday. It was a Senate broadcast day. And naturally, there was a bit of knowledge that this sort of statement was going to be made in the House. And I wanted the broadcast switched. I didn't want to be in the Senate when Howard was making this announcement in the House of Representatives. But there are procedures involved in getting the broadcast switched. And they're fairly cumbersome even to this day. You've got to approach the presiding officer, the officers, the President of the Senate, Speaker of the House, and they have to meet and run it by the broadcasting committee. I don't know whether they email or anything these days. Usually takes about a day to get the permission, but it's not an easy thing to do. So that's the type of thing where the broadcasting committee becomes involved if you want to switch the broadcast. That's why I don't... I made it a practice not to do it too often unless I really thought it was necessary. Yes.
So from what you were saying, you weren't often, if ever, criticised for comments you had made during a broadcast?
I can't really remember. No. So, and I usually remember things like that pretty well. I have had comments, criticism about things I've said on the ABC, doing my ordinary, when I say the ordinary, the announcing job. I've had that, but not in relation to parliamentary broadcasting, no. So hopefully I must have done things correctly and remained apolitical and everything I should have done.
What were your hours of work in a normal week or day?
Fairly typical one would be a start of like 2 in the afternoon, through till midnight, say, when Parliament was in session. A fairly typical one.
And that was so... this, you're talking about time when you... The days when Parliament's sitting, you're basically 100% of your time is spent in Parliament.
No. I can hardly ever remember a day where it was 100% back in there. I usually had to go and do something at Northmont Avenue, whether it was the bit of radio or a bit of TV or both as well, during that break between 6 and 8 o'clock. So I guess a typical day along those lines from 2 till 11, the majority of it would be in Parliament. Say from 2 till, I guess I must have left there at 5, 5.30 to go over and do my bit at Northbourne Avenue. And then I'd come back and go from 8 o'clock onwards, I suppose. Because you've got to have time to have your dinner and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Can I ask you, what was the pay like in relative terms?
Well,
was it a well-paid job? More better paid than say being a standard, you know, someone who worked solely on announcing from.
There was no loading for parliamentary broadcasting, if that's what you mean. No. It was just the same pay. Mm. The pay I received when I joined the ABC was considerably better than the commercial pay, and that's still the case, unless you happen to be one of the stars on commercial radio in capital cities. They make a lot of money, of course. But generally speaking, and it's still the case, the ABC pays better than commercial.
Mm.
That's still the case. Mm. But no, there was no loading to do additional work like parliamentary broadcasting, nothing like that.
Were you ever a member of a union?
For a while, yes. For a while, not all the time. Yeah, I was a union member. I can't remember what was the union. Commonwealth Public Service Union, I think it was.
Was there any industrial dispute while you were working and that you may have taken part in?
I can remember one time, yes, prodding my memory here. I can remember being chastised by the union once because there was an industrial dispute in Sydney and we were supposed to go out in sympathy for them in Canberra. It was quite a Sydney issue. And we were supposed to go off the air for half an hour during the period that Sydney had their meeting, I think it was, and just put tone on. And we decided, for whatever reason, not to do that in the Canberra branch because it was a purely Sydney thing. And I think I've still got the letter at home where this was frowned upon by the Canberra branch that we should have gone out in sympathy for this. So the place was quite unionised in those days. So, yes, I was a rather naughty boy, I suppose. It was me and Errol Silver, and it was Errol Silver who was then the manager of the branch, and he actually said, we're not going to do this, and I agreed we didn't. But I got the letter. Where they said, punitive action will not be taken at this stage, we have decided. However, you've been a naughty boy.
To what extent, when you were doing this period of time, were you part of the press gallery?
No, never.
Never?
No. And I didn't know too many people in the press gallery. I mean, I came across them early in the piece. I can remember George Negus coming into the studio downstairs here. And Paul Lockyer, who died last year. I can remember him. And you might say good day and have a bit of a chat with them, but I wasn't great friends with any of these people. They were sort of quite separate to what we did.
Mm.
Mm.
Did you have much contact with parliamentarians and all their staffers?
Not a great deal, no. No. In fact, nil, I'd say.
What, I thought on a slightly different thread here.
I'm just correcting yourself, myself. From time to time, and it happens these days, there might be a member of parliament who comes into the broadcast booth for whatever reason and has a bit of a chat. But that sort of contact, but nothing regular, no.
And not at a social level?
No, not contact. Really, no. Okay. Yeah.
I just want to ask you about what the sort of technologies were you working with in 1976 when you started?
Well, much different to today. Of course, it's all digital these days. But, for example, when they recorded Question Time, from the non-broadcast house, that was done on reel-to-reel tape, of course, and that had to be edited in accordance with parliamentary procedure. They had, and this is still the case, they have to take out points of order and interruptions for the replay. So it's physically cutting tape in those days and splicing it together, which I didn't have anything to do with this part of it, but I observed it happening downstairs in that area I was telling you about.
Was that not done by the Hansard editors?
No, I'll tell you who used to come at you. Who used to come in was the sergeant at arms, and the usher of the Black Rod in those days. Doesn't happen now. And you used to say, that's got to come out, that's got to come out. That they used to actually sit there and listen to it and tell the operator what had to come out. So that's something that's changed since those days.
What sort of things were they cut out? That's why I said, where
just points of order, interruptions. And also questions that give rise to a personal explanation. They were the rules, yeah.
But that was not something that involved...
I was aware of it happening, and...
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's why when we introduced the recording of Question Time, we'd say this recording of questions and answers have been edited in accordance with parliamentary procedure. Certain points of order and interruptions have been deleted from the recording. I can say it off pat because we just said, I don't know how many times I said it. Yeah.
In what way did technology change during all the years that you worked and are still working with?
Well, very much so. I mean, you have only got to look at the difference between the two booths now. The booth that still exists here in the old Parliament House with these ancient little buttons that they had. Mm. And what they've got now, which is all digitised. I'm not a great technical mind at all, but it's just changed enormously. And now we've got television monitors, of course. We didn't have those in the old booth. The Question Time replay was actually played from the booth. On a machine that I think is still in the House of Representatives booth up on the wall, a little tape player. I'm pretty sure it's still there.
How did you regard the job that as parliamentary broadcaster, as something special or just a job?
In the early days, probably just a job, I've got to say. But as I say, it's one of these things that crept up on me. And sometimes you'd sort of take a hold of yourself and you think, hey, Terry, you know, this is pretty good stuff, what you're watching. There's not too many people that can sit and look into the chamber of the House of Representatives and the Senate during Question Time. Like, I can still be knocked out by that when I think about it these days. Mm. But it's something you tend to take for granted, and I suppose you shouldn't. Yeah.
Plus one might ask, would you see it as a kind of a democratic measure allowing people to hear their representatives speak?
Yes, we should never underestimate that in this country. We've got so many ways we can follow Parliament. We can come and watch it live. In many countries, you can't even do that. Mm. We can hear it on radio. We can watch parts of it on television. You've got Question Time. You've got, of course, the internet these days. There's so many ways you can follow Parliament. And as I say, we should never underestimate that. It's a privilege, I think. Mm. And the fact that we can come into our parliamentary building still, and I hope this never changes, and not have to go through terrible security to get in. Mm. I mean, everybody has to go through security, but that's something too that we enjoy in this country and a lot of people take for granted. Mm. And we shouldn't.
Well, question just occurred to me. We talked about the reporting what's happening in the two chambers. So much of the parliamentary work these days happens in committees, which are now televised, and you can see them live on various channels.
Mm.
Does the kind of job that you had, the parliamentary broadcaster, get involved with any of that, or is it a separate operation?
No, the operators that I work with, and still do, that do the sound for the chambers, they also work on the committees. So they have far more involvement than I do. In fact, I have nil involvement with committees. I know that they're on, of course. Mm. We were never involved in any of that as far as broadcasting it or anything like that.
So that was, and the people who do work with them, do they operate, do you know whether they operate in more or less the same kind of way that you would?
Well, they're there just to physically get it recorded. I'm talking about the people that sit in the booth with me for parliamentary broadcasting. Their additional duties include covering those committees. And all those committee rooms have rooms off them, control rooms, if you like, small control rooms where the operators sit to do their job.
Mm.
So everything is recorded in the building, I don't know how long they keep all this recording for. I can't answer that, but everything's there and needs to be when you think about it for the permanent record.
What changes did you experience or witness in the building, Old Timer House, while you were working there over your time? And I suppose the changes and that happened when you moved up to the Australian Parliament House, because you continued with your work there and still are working there.
The main change was really the security one under the front steps. A major change, as I've mentioned before. Apart from that, nothing much really changed during the years that I was working there. They made minor cosmetic changes, I suppose, to the staff dining room, that type of thing. I thought there was a far better feeling of camaraderie in this building than there is in the current building, simply because of the sizes of the places. I used to regularly dine with my operators down in the staff dining room, and we'd be all on one table. Never see that now. In fact, they all seem to go to their offices, get a takeaway, and they go to their office somewhere to eat. Mm. So we've lost a bit of that, which I suppose was inevitable. That's why I've got, you know, quite a soft spot for this building, because in terms of camaraderie, it was far superior to the current building.
So you had a chance still, even though your job was maybe locked away, you were locked away in a small office down below, you were still sense of being part of a larger...
You really felt you were more like part of a group, yeah. Mm. With one aim, basically, yeah, to get the broadcast out there. Yeah.
So from working at the Australian Parliament House after you left here, the main differences where when you moved up there was space and...
Space and the fact that you just don't come into contact with politicians like you did in this building, simply because of the very nature of the building. It'd be quite common to pass a leader of the opposition or even a prime minister in King's Hall here back in those days. Now you hardly ever see that in Parliament House. Mm. If they come into the building, they come into the rear of the building, into the ministerial wing, which is so far away from the main public areas. That's the main difference between that building and this one.
So did the move towards television coverage of proceedings rather than purely radio, did that lead to any changes in procedures or the way that you operated?
Not in terms of the radio broadcast, it was quite separate. The television, I think, came fairly late in the piece in this building. And of course, with the current building, it opened with television cameras already in place, poking out of the walls. So it was built for the TV coverage, which this building, of course, clearly wasn't. I forget the question now that you asked me about that. What was?
Well, simply whether the move towards now we see more television coverage than we listen to perhaps radio.
Yes.
Whether that actually the change move towards television actually led to any changes in the procedures, because you were still doing the announcing, whether it was telecast or.
Yeah, I don't know whether it led to, but there were changes in the procedures, the way we approached the broadcast. I think I've mentioned this. We gave more information than we did in the early days. We were far more conscious of it being an actual broadcast. Excuse me. Mm. And so there's much more information given out now than there used to be. That's the main difference between presentation now and presentation in this building.
But from the parliamentary broadcaster, you're still voices, you're not faces seen on television.
No.
But and also, did the difference in fact that this building is so much smaller and therefore, for example, the number of, they only had 2 or 3 minutes when they had called the division, and similarly, they would take much less time for get those procedures in. Were you able to say more when you came up there because you had longer gaps?
Well, that would be part of it. That would be part of it. Now, just from memory, in this building, in the last years of this building, they used to ring the bell. Well, it started off at just 2 minutes, but then they added a third minute. So the sum total for the division here might have been something more like 6 or 7 instead of 10, which it is now.
And you were, but you were, even here you were filling in the space in between, so to speak.
Towards the end, we started to do this, but when I first started doing it, so you've got to know that I didn't do this continuously in this building. I started in 1976, and there was a long period there, I think from the mid-80s probably to mid-90s, where I didn't do any parliamentary coverage at all. My work was concentrated entirely over in Northbourne Avenue. So it hasn't been a continuous thing. I came back to the parliamentary broadcast in late 90s, I think it was, 70, 97, something like that, on a casual basis. And that's the way I'm still employed.
So you would have noticed the changes, if there were there any changes during that period of time that you weren't there?
I missed the entire period when Keating was Prime Minister, for example. Excuse me. Yes, there were changes when I went back. In fact, it was a bit of a challenge at first. I thought, my goodness, we've got to say a lot more than we used to. But the rules had changed then. To fill as much as possible that 10 minutes with information. And that was a complete reversal of my instruction when I first started here in 76.
So you became more like a news reader, reading out the daily news?
Yeah, well, that was part of it. That was part of it. But you're allowed to talk about more things, but all to do with Parliament, basically. I mean, I had, for example, and they still use them, some little segments recorded. They were done in Sydney. They were produced with music behind them called Parliamentary Minutes. And they come in quite handy. They're about things like the role of the Speaker, the role of the clerk, etc., 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 that can be quite handy if you've had five or six or seven divisions in a row and you're tired of just repeating yourself. While we're waiting for this result in this division, let's have another parliamentary minute. This one's about the clerk of the House of Representatives, you know, and you play it. So I had those produced. Lots of information I had at people's fingertips in the booth about the building and parliamentary procedure, basically taken out of the Bibles, you know, parliamentary practice, but in readable language.
Did you actually write the news yourself, or were they served? Did you get
news from part? No, that was simply sent from Sydney. That was faxed initially. Now it comes down on it. It's on a computer screen. But no, we don't write it. No, we just read it.
Now tell me, what did you like most, or do you like most, about the job of parliamentary broadcaster?
I like observing question time and the theatre of it. I mean, it can be very boring if the 44th speaker on the Apple and Pear Levy bill. I keep on using that for an example, but you know, some of them can be very dull bills. Very boring. You get that too. But then the unpredictability of the place. And these days, of course, there's hardly a question time that's allowed to go through intact without a motion coming from the Leader of the Opposition. That's changed in the last few years, yes.
What?
Which, of course, I suppose is simply a reflection of the nature of a hung parliament, when you think about it. Sorry. I'm being apolitical now, aren't I?
What was the thing you liked or did not like or liked least of the things that you were doing as parliamentary broadcaster?
Liked least? The fact that sometimes at a moment's notice the sitting can be extended and it can completely ruin your plans. And this happened a few times. I can remember the worst time. This is about 10 years ago. And the Senate sat on a Friday night. They hardly ever do. But I can't remember the situation now, but the sitting time was extended to Friday night, which completely ruined a plan that I had, a dinner party at a restaurant. So they're the type of things that annoyed me. They didn't happen very often, where out of the blue you are at the mercy of the Parliament when they change their sitting hours. Luckily, this doesn't happen very often. A colleague of mine, and I didn't get it, this is, again, probably 12, 14 years ago. It was during the Howard years. he was in the booth until 5:45 in the morning. He got caught with the extension of the parliament. We knew it was going to be a late sitting night, and I think from memory I got out of there at 10 or 11 o'clock and another colleague was finished at 12 or 1, and John got the rest till 5:45. That would be his worst memory, John Ringwood's. But it's that type of thing that you've got absolutely no control about over, and that's when you realise that you are completely in their hands.
What do you think of today's parliamentary broadcasts in a general sense? Has, for example, the conduct of parliamentarians changed over time?
Yes. Far too many speeches are read these days. And there was a rule once where you couldn't read speeches in both houses, but that's been waived. And I suppose that reflects the complexity of government too. But there's too much of that. I can't remember any performers like Jim Killen, for example, for years. He was the best that I ever saw. I mean, he could be devastating in some of the things that he said simply by using the Queen's English without resorting to any sort of gutter language or anything like that. You don't see too much of it that these days.
What do you think about the way in which Question Time operates and operated back when you started and what it, how it operates now?
There's been a lot of criticism lately about the way it's been operating. I'm not sure that it's changed all that much. I guess it's become... The word that you hear these days more often than not is toxic. Again, as a result of a hung parliament, the atmosphere is not very nice at the moment. I think that's changed. That's certainly something in the last couple of years. I really can't comment too much more than that because I'm still involved in parliamentary broadcasting. And I just know that it has changed. But I don't know that it's as bad as people are claiming it to be, given the circumstances that we're facing. I don't know whether that answers your question.
Well, then, are there any difference between the two chambers? And were there any difference between how they operate?
Well, there's always a difference between the two chambers. I mean, the Senate is the one that is the frustrating one from a broadcaster's point of view because they go through things in such fine detail, but that's the nature of the Senate. It's the House of Review. From a broadcasting point of view, it could sound very deadly dull and boring, I'd imagine. A lot. What else can I say? I mean, you know, just the two chambers operate quite differently, really.
Do you have any preference? And one that you think is, the more contemplative, perhaps, than the other?
I prefer the House of Representatives, usually. But again, you can't... It just depends on what's on at the time. It depends on what's on at the time. Yeah.
You've been involved with parliamentary broadcasting for a long period of time now. How do you view the culture of Parliament today? Is it more democratic or less democratic than when you started back in 1976?
I don't know. You could probably say... It's more democratic. That's reflected in the hung parliament. I mean, when you hear people criticising it, we voted that parliament in. You know? I don't know whether that answers your question. You can't say it's less democratic. If anything, it's more.
What about the quality of oratory? Has that changed much?
What, of the announcers or the members and senators?
I think we're talking about the members here.
I don't think it's as good as it used to be. There aren't too many performers now in the that would really hold your attention like Keating and Jim Killen, and I keep using him, and Peter Costello, of course, more recently. Mick Young there was a good one too. Those sort of characters are not in the place now. Again, I'm getting into dangerous territory because I still do parliamentary broadcasting.
You mentioned as people that you, colleagues that you appreciated very much working with, Kevin Chapman, Errol Silver, Rod Henshaw, Bruce Webster and Peter Leonard.
Oh, Bruce Webster, yes.
Mm-hmm. Anything you want can talk about any of them as individuals and their special ways of doing things, perhaps?
There's one person I didn't mention there is Brian Minnards, who I still talk to, and he's retired now. He'll be 80 in a couple of weeks. He's down in Batehaven. Bruce Webster's retired also. He's on the Central Coast, Kincumber, around Gosford. Errol Silver's passed on. So has Kevin Chapman. So has Peter Leonard. Sadly, a lot of these people are not around anymore. Rod Henshaw, I used to work with at 2CA as well. I've lost contact with him in recent years. He's somewhere up north.
Have you got any sort of anecdotes, special memories, you know, events?
There's one that I always like to mention in terms of parliamentary broadcasting, and that was the day when Billy Snedden, when he was the Speaker of the House of Representatives, severely admonished the member for Hunter, Bert James, and he said, and I'm going to have to use a rather naughty word here, he said to Bert James, "The member for Hunter will resume his seat. The member for Hunter will resume his seat," just like that. And as Bert James sat down, he said to his colleague sitting next to him, under his breath, "He's a bit fucking tough, isn't he?" Well, we heard it in the booth. It was, remember, this is a